The Marvel Handbook, Episode 8, Atlantis, Atlanteans, and Atalan, Home of the Inhumans.
Flame on!
Marvel Universe.
The Avengers, Black Panther.
Black Widow.
Colossus and Cyclops.
The Crimson Dynamo.
Daredevil.
Doctor Strange.
The Fantastic Four.
Galactus. Ghost Rider. Motorcycle Hero.
Hellcat.
Howard the Duck.
The Human Torch.
The Incredible Hulk.
Bruce Banner.
Invincible Girl.
Iron Man.
MODOK.
I need a
Mr. Fantastic.
They will see Lord Prince of the Deep.
Nightcrawler.
Odin.
Power Man and Iron Fist.
Professor X.
The Punisher.
Rick Jones.
Sergeant Fury.
The She-Hulk.
Silver Surfer.
Spider-Man.
Spider-Woman.
Scorpion. The X-Men. The Thing. Ben Grimm.
The Mighty Thor.
Stadium Man.
Wolverine.
The Marvel Superheroes.
From the world beneath the sea that lies just outside your window. Know that I am Namor, ruler of the kingdom of Atlantis. The cool sea, home again. How the astringent waters of brine restore my courage and fill my heart with gladness. Would that these depths remained ever pure. Sentinels of Atlantis, salute your ruler. Ah, Atlantis, my capital city awaits. Is it not magnificent? A pearl of the deepest deep, lustrous and mysterious, awaiting my return in majestic silence. My throne room is yours.
Hi, I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren.
And we're of Rad Adventures Network.
And we're here to talk to you about some Marvel characters that really interest us.
Normally, you may hear us talking about Trekker over at Trekker Talk.
Or you might be hearing us on Warlord Worlds talking about the works of Mike Grell.
Or Xenozoic Tales about the work of Mark Schultz.
One thing that's interesting about the choices you've made over the course of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe coverage is that you tend to pick more literary items, things that are from world lore or from books that Marvel has absorbed into their universe. And so I'm wondering, are you coming at this from the perspective of those literary angle, or do you actually have comic book familiarity with how Marvel has employed these concepts?
Oh, that's a really great question, Frank. It's interesting because when I was growing up, there really weren't a lot of Marvel comics on the spinner rack. There was one spinner rack at one grocery store in the little town where I grew up, so I didn't get to see a lot of Marvel. But the way I always went into comics was I loved adventure stories, whatever type of adventure that might be, sort of more than action. I always think of adventure being a quest, or it involves a journey, it involves some suspense and some mystery and some intrigue, all those things sort of more than action. So those are always the things I've liked my whole life, whether it's in books or film or TV. So the comics that I gravitated toward were always the less superhero ones. There were some superhero comics I really loved, but I always gravitated toward ones that had fewer superheroes and were sort of more action-y or adventure-y. And I grew up loving gothic horror. So, for instance, Tomb of Dracula was always on my to-get list whenever I went to the grocery store.
And I had a wonderful time. I appreciated how you sent out the choices in smaller batches. And I took the lead on choosing, looked them all up, some of them I'd never heard of, never come across, to read a little bit about, and just sort of sent you the ones that seemed most appealing and interested from my point of view.
Let's dive in on Atlantis. What can you tell me about the Lost Continent?
I would say this one appeals to me because I love maps. So studying the layout of the world here of Atlantis was fun for me. And I'm always interested in stories that involve Atlantis, anything about Atlantis or undersea adventures. You know, let me see the electric eels and the sharks and the sea creatures. That's so exciting.
Yeah, I agree completely with Ruth. I love maps too. When you get to visit our house one of these days, when you come to Raleigh, I'm sure that'll work out eventually, you'll see maps on the walls. So we both love maps. And I'm just like Ruth, that's where the adventure story aspect comes in again. I always loved, whether it was a pirate story or Captain Nemo or Treasure Island, stories that were on the sea or under the sea were always interesting. And that's why I gravitated toward it. I was a fan of Aquaman because I would read comics with Aquaman when I was a kid. I had heard of Submariner, but I never saw a Submariner comic on the spinner rack at the little grocery store. So I'm sure I would have been picking it up and reading it if I'd just had the chance then, but I didn't make that connection. So I didn't fall for that character back then.
Out of curiosity, did either of you ever have any exposure to the old 60s Marvel cartoons with the very limited animation that supposedly were built off of chopped up original artwork from the comics?
No, not at all.
Submariner had one of the features there, and so some people who may not have gotten to see him otherwise could see him there. But, of course, I think around the same time Aquaman had his cartoon, and I got to tell you, the Aquaman cartoon was vastly superior to Submariner, so I think it would have paled somewhat.
Interesting. I saw the Aquaman cartoon as a kid. That was around the time that I was watching them in the late 60s, early 70s. And then the Super Friends right after that. So I was always watching those. But yeah, I didn't see the one with Submariner. Interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to check that out.
Given your familiarity with Atlantis from fiction and the like, does this map seem like it relates to anything that you can find from the actual world lore, or is this more of a Marvel thing?
I think of it as more of a Marvel thing, just looking at it. It's not unfamiliar, but I think the placement and sort of the size, a couple of the other things, make me think more Marvel-centric than what I'd necessarily seen before.
Yeah, the continent here on this map is huge.
I'm just grateful that unlike DC, they actually put Atlantis in the Atlantic Ocean.
It works.
I do notice that in the entry, there's a reference to King Kull, who I believe is from Robert E. Howard, correct?
Oh, interesting. You know, I haven't read a lot of Robert E. Howard myself. I have a couple of friends who will probably cringe hearing me say that. Mark Schultz has illustrated so many of those books, but I haven't read them as much myself. So you probably know better than I do.
While I've read some Conan in my day, I've had very little exposure to King Kull. It just is odd to me because Conan was so important to Marvel back in the 70s. It was one of the properties that saved Marvel from bankruptcy, from what I understand, that and Star Wars. And it's interesting to see Kull acknowledged in this book, but I'm not sure that they always had the rights to Kull, because my understanding is that the Robert E. Howard estate still owns most of that material. Am I mistaken in that, or do you know anything about that?
No, I think you would be right about that, because, I mean, that's one of the things, his estates really held on to everything. And it's interesting that you're mentioning that, because we heard some discussions about, it was an entire presentation on Conan at Marvel that we heard. Was that at Dragon Con just this past year, Ruth? Yeah, it was really interesting. And you've heard exactly right from what I gathered from them as how important that title was for them and helping save them and being a consistent seller and tapping into an audience that they didn't already have. So I know that you're exactly right about the importance of it.
What works have you been exposed to that tie you into Atlantis? What areas of interest do you have from outside of Marvel Comics that brought you to want to talk about Atlantis?
There were so many movies set around Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and then going off onto underwater cities. Sometimes they were called Atlantis, sometimes they weren't. So I grew up on those. You know, Saturday and Sunday matinees were filled with those types of movies, and I loved every one of them, the good and the bad. I track them down whenever I can here as an adult so I can see them again. And then all the way up to, there was a fantastic BBC TV series just recently in the last 10 years.
It was excellent.
Yeah, about Atlantis. And it's interesting. They had a 5-year plan for the series, and sadly, it only ran 2 seasons because they didn't get to the sinking of Atlantis yet. But it sort of starts in the first episode. It starts, I think, after Atlantis is already under the sea, and then it sort of goes back in time and starts coming forward. But it's something that we're always interested in and looking out for. And in reading this page about Atlantis and other things that I read online about the Marvel version of Atlantis, I was just really intrigued by some of the things like the magma pits and all that sort of stuff. I was like, oh man, this is great. I need to read more of this.
It's interesting to me that of all the properties, Atlantis seems to be so foundational for both Marvel and DC. Probably less so DC because it's mostly centered on Aquaman. Aquaman's somewhat been isolated for most of his existence. However, by the 80s, with Arion and really trying to play up Atlantis's historical role later on in the decade when they got into the Atlantis Chronicles, the historical relevance of Atlantis to DC's overarching history. And then you look at Marvel, literally the very first Marvel character ever created was Namor the Submariner. And so Atlantis not only was a key part of their Golden Age, but of course when they revived Submariner early in the Fantastic Four run, that was the source of connection between the Marvel Age of comics in the 1960s and the original Timely books through Namor and through the invasion of Atlantis. So it's just odd. Of all the places that could be relevant to the two biggest comic book universes, it's weird that Atlantis, of all concepts, was so important to both of them.
I like that. It has such imagination and a fantasy element, so I love the connection.
And it's a really nice perspective, too, that you put on it. Again, like I said, it makes me wish that as a kid I'd had the ability to be able to find these titles. Living in a little town of 2,000 people, I just didn't have the luck. But it's exactly what I would have loved reading. And I like you giving that perspective on how much more important it is to the Marvel world. And it is a shame that DC tended to sort of sideline Aquaman. I can remember being frustrated. You know, Aquaman didn't always have his own title. So, you know, he would turn up sometimes just in other books, in backup features or in Justice League or something like that. And I can remember as a kid reading comics when you'd have Superman or Batman out doing something in the ocean. And I'm like, why isn't this an Aquaman story? But you're right. They sidelined him too much, or they could have done more with Atlantis.
But it is interesting, too, with the ascent of Aquaman, it doesn't seem like Marvel really knows what to do with Submariner and Atlantis, whereas DC is using him more and more. And of course, he just made $1 billion at the movies. So suddenly Atlantis is extremely prominent within the DC universe. So it's almost like this one waxes and one wanes. Now I would say Atlantis is hugely important to DC. And really, they have been focusing on their Atlantis since the 80s. And to a large degree, Marvel has paid as little attention as possible to Atlantis since the 80s, like a tide.
That's a good way of looking at it, because you're right. Thanks to the success of that movie, and I think even starting all the way back with Geoff Johns taking over the Aquaman book back around 2011, he really gave the character some weight again, probably for the first time since you mentioned the Atlantis Chronicles, which is interesting. You know, everyone thinks of that as being a great Aquaman story, but really it's about everything up to Aquaman, ends with his birth. It helped establish some weight to the character then. That they followed through on for a little while before dropping it, but then Geoff Johns brought it back, and then that led right into this great movie, which it is a really spectacular movie. And you're right, DC's all on board with Atlantis now, because besides getting Aquaman 2, we're getting a sequel also based on the Trench that won't even have Aquaman in it. They're going out and trying to explore that any way they can. And it's a shame that Marvel, for a while, I was reading stuff in the trades that they were trying to get a Namor movie, but they just didn't seem to be able to pull together what they needed to in order to get ahead of DC. And now I think probably the timing isn't quite right for them to come up right now.
I actually root for DC on this front, though, because I feel like Marvel has strategically tried to block DC by taking any similar IP and putting it out there to the fore as quickly as possible. You know, let's get our Thanos out there before they can get their dark side, that sort of thing. And I really feel like Atlantis is a place that DC can handle better. And I think that Atlantis and also Wonder Woman's Themyscira is showing DC what they do well. And it's funny because I think that the comic book publishers have always shied away from what DC does best. I think that they are actually better at mythology and lore and fables and not having such densely plotted cross-continuity. I think that the characters work better in isolation and maybe occasionally having a Super Friends type of thing where you just throw logic out the window. But I think it works better to let Aquaman go off and have his Atlantis and have his own remote adventures. It's something that hurt Aquaman in terms of his ability, as you pointed out, because of so many years where he didn't even have a book, because he worked better as a fantasy character. And now that we've seen in the movies, of course he works way better as a fantasy character. Everything about Atlantis is fantastical, and the more you try to veer away from that, the less you're tapping into its essential appeal. So I'm actually glad things worked out the way they did. I think that Atlantis is in a better place at DC and in DC's multimedia than they would be at Marvel anyway.
You know, you're preaching to the crowd here, Frank, on that. I agree with you completely. I think DC, their entire character lineup even seems made for sort of more fantastical, more mythological type stories, and I think they could do them well. And you're right, I think they shy away from them. I think they found some big success in some areas and they're afraid to stray too far from them. But I agree with you. This Aquaman movie and that Wonder Woman movie were spectacular, and I'm glad that they're paving the way for a different type of DC movie, because I think DC's been stuck in a rut with their movies and, again, didn't quite know where to go. Maybe these two fringe franchises that they didn't really have a lot of high hopes for that turned around and became their billion-dollar movies will show them that, hey, we've got some really valuable IP there other than Batman and Superman that we could really spend some time with. And that's what I hope really happens.
Well, and the simple fact is it's sometimes it's nice to just walk in and watch one good movie and not feel like you have to watch 50 different other things.
I know what you mean about that, because I, you know, even though I don't have the nostalgia for the Marvel characters since I didn't grow up with them, I really enjoy the Marvel movies. They're good, fun movies. They're a bit cookie cutter. They're a bit sort of the same. But the thing is, they're good the same. And you go in and you like them. But at the same time, I'm not compelled to see them as soon as they come out. So sometimes I'll get behind and then there'll be one out that I want to see. So I'll ask my friend like Paul, who is a huge Marvel fan and sees the movies opening weekend. I'll ask him, okay, can I go to this one? And he'll say, well, yeah, you can go to that one as long as you've watched this and this and this. And I'm like, okay, I've got homework to do now before I can see this one.
An atmosphere of gloom pervades the fabled city of Atlantis. For within the Palace Royal, its monarch, Prince Namor the First, lies ill.
Still the fever rages. My Lord Vashti, there must be more we can do.
Our court physician is doing all that can be done, Lady Dorma.
We can do naught but wait. The drug I have given him will induce deep sleep until the fever abates.
Listen well, Namor. For what I am about to tell you may decide your destiny. It began many years ago, near the South Pole. A young captain aboard an icebreaker ship gave an order that was to determine your fate.
Depth charge is in place, sir. Good. Fire away.
Little did he suspect that an age-old civilization many fathoms below would be rocked by that explosion.
'Tis the surface men who are responsible. I shall order a force to go above and investigate.
No, Father. To send a force would mean bloodshed. Let me go.
And though the king resisted, the strong-willed Princess Fen had her way. Reaching the Oracle, she climbed aboard the silent ship.
Oh! Who are you? Now look what I found, Captain. Where did you come from? She's having trouble breathing. She fainted. Get some water, quickly.
Revived by the water, the beautiful princess looked deep into the eyes of the young captain, and both fell hopelessly in love. And so, the two races, separated for countless ages, were united once more.
Until death do us part.
Weeks later, the king, concerned about his daughter's prolonged absence, dispatched a war party to rescue the princess.
Captain, we're being attacked!
And so the heartbroken princess returned to Atlantis to bear a son, then die of a broken heart. And you, Namor, are the child of that tragic marriage.
Hello, I'm Kyle from the KSCGSF podcast, and I'm lucky enough here to tackle the Atlanteans entry today. So my thanks to Frank for letting me be a part of this awesome project here, awesome series of podcast episodes. Of course, the Atlanteans are really kind of a unique comic device in the fact that this race is represented at both the major superhero publishing comic companies out there, both the big two, Marvel and DC. Of course, Marvel here with Prince Namor, Mr. Imperius Rex himself, and Aquaman over at the DC front, both characters being half Atlantean, half human. Kind of unique in that situation that characters so closely mirrored with each other being represented by both companies that way. Namor was first, and he's actually one of my favorite comic characters, and that's why I was excited to get to tackle this one this time out. So the Atlanteans entry here from the official handbook of the Marvel Universe actually has, I think it's 18 head sketches here, characters introduced, and a nice little text blurb here, which I will just read for you. The Atlanteans are a subspecies of Homo sapiens called Homo romanus, who possess gills to enable them to breathe underwater, superhuman anatomy to enable them to withstand great water pressure, green light-sensitive vision to enable them to see in the murky depths, and bluish skin. Descended from the land-dwelling Atlanteans of pre-cataclysmic times, Homo Uranus came into being about 17,000 years ago, when the Olympian god of the sea, Poseidon, used his arcane arts to convert a tribe of his worshippers into water breathers. Originally a nomadic people, the Atlanteans eventually created various settlements across the ocean floor, the major one located on the ruins of the surface of Atlantis. The following individuals are the best-known Atlanteans of the 20th century. So first we have Namor the Submariner, Prince of Atlantis, first appeared in Fantastic Four number 4. Okay, about that. Interesting that at this point in history, when Ohotmu was created, Marvel was choosing to completely ignore their Golden and Atomic Age publishing history, when in reality, Namor is as old as the concept of the Marvel Universe itself. He was actually introduced in Marvel Comics number 1, which had an October 1939 cover date. Him, along with the original Human Torch, are the oldest characters that Marvel ever created. At that point, of course, they were going by timely and then got into the Atomic Age there, late 40s through the 50s. Marvel was going under the publishing name Atlas Comics. Namor had a run with both. Fairly lengthy run in the Golden Age. It's put on the shelf for a few years and then dusted off when the name was changed to Atlas. There was a number of anthology titles like Young Stories for Men or Young Boys. Namor, along with Captain America and the Human Torch, all had stories in those anthology titles. So very interesting that Marvel is choosing at this point to ignore all that history, continuity, and essentially look at their Marvel universe as existing only after Fantastic Four number 1. Namor had lost his memory. That's why he was wandering around this homeless guy in Fantastic Four number 4. Johnny Storm kind of recognized him. First, he singed his beard off and he saw, hey, that guy looks like the Submariner from World War II. Threw him in the water. The water revived his strength, revived his memory, and then he went off on a search to find Atlantia, all the Atlanteans and Atlantis, and couldn't. And so there were some memory loss issues there, wondering where his people were, and that was an ongoing thread then going on through the Tales to Astonish storyline that bled over to the first few issues of his ongoing series as well. And so that's a great read. To read that, you're probably going to have to pick up the Marvel Masterworks. Volumes 1 and 2 would touch on that. Maybe bleed a little bit over to the beginning of Volume 3. I'm trying to think of how those issues break up into those Masterworks. Need to get into Namor the Submariner series of Marvel Epic Editions or ongoings. So the next character we have introduced here is Dorma, the royal consort. She's deceased at this point, and she first appeared in Fantastic Four Annual number 1. Then we have Atuma, definitely up there after Namor. You have Lady Dorma, probably Namorita, and then Atuma. Those are probably the three premier Atlantean characters that were used most often in Marvel publishing, and probably the three characters that Marvel fans are most familiar with. Of course, you can't say Atuma without feeling like you have to do what every other podcaster does and say, it's not Atuma. But anyway, he is a barbarian usurper, and he made his first appearance in Fantastic Four number 33. Next, it's Byra. He's a cousin of Namor. He first appeared in Tales to Astonish number 90. We have Vashti. He's a vizier of Atlantis, so kind of like wizard. First appeared in Tales to Astonish number 71, which I believe was, yeah, that would have been just the second issue of Namor's run in Tales to Astonish. We have Namorita, or Namorita, cousin of Namor. She first appeared in Submariner number 50. You have Krang, the warlord of Atlantis. He first appeared in Fantastic Four Annual number 1. Tyrak, Krang's lieutenant. He first appeared in Avengers number 156. Seth, an advisor to Namor. He first appeared in Tales to Astonish number 98. Ichthon is a treacherous scientist who first appeared in Submariner number 7. Lor Vex, he's a barbarian with an eye patch. He first appeared in Submariner number 54. Cormac, he is the high priest of Atlantis. He first appeared in Submariner number 17. Thakos, who has an awesome Atlantean helmet here. So a couple of characters have had awesome Atlantean helmets. Of course, you have Atuma's really goofy one, and then Vera, Tyrak, Seth, and now Thakos all have kind of unique, definitely look Greek mythology-inspired helmets. Thakos is a warlord of Atlantis who first appeared in Submariner number 16, I believe that says. Text is kind of difficult to read. Coral, female character, pretty beautiful for a blue lady, I guess. She's a citizen of the realm of Atlantis, first appeared in Submariner number 56. Raymond, or Ramen, kind of looks like a bearded wonder from the Kryptonian Council here. He's a gatekeeper of Atlantis. You're only a true Atlantean fan if you know who Ramen is. Gatekeeper. First appeared in Submariner number 66. Then you have Arcus. He's a fairly common or popular Atlantean character. Atlantean officer, first appeared in Submariner number 63. Maddox is an Atlantean elder statesman, first appeared in Submariner number 64. And then Volpan is an Atlantean technician. He first appeared in Submariner number 63. So as you can see, or I guess in this case here, most of these 17 supporting Atlantean characters outside of Namor were either introduced during Namor's run in Tales to Astonish, which began in issue number 70 and then ran through issue 102. At that point, issue 103 was renamed from Tales to Astonish to the second volume of Incredible Hulk and kept the numbering there. At that point then, there was kind of a one-shot that was The Submariner and Iron Man. Very disappointing. I finally got a chance to read that thanks to Marvel's digital offering and thought for years that surely that had to have been this awesome crossover between Iron Man and Prince Namor. They had some Silver and Bronze Age crossovers. Those were some of my favorite. I love those Iron Man and Namor covers. Some of those are my favorite covers all time from Marvel Comics. Finally, when I got a chance to read that one digitally, I was like, oh yes, this has got to be an awesome adventure between these two characters. No, instead, they were both just split. It was essentially just a split book. They each had their solo adventures. And what was odd is the Iron Man adventure was actually happening at sea at that point, so it would have been like a natural, very easily hooked to bring Namor in at that point, continuing their ongoing stories that had come from the two anthology titles they were both coming from. Iron Man got kicked out of Tales of Suspense, which became the Cap book. It would have been a great crossover point there. They were both written by Roy Thomas, and that didn't happen. They were just two self-contained solo stories. They did not cross over at all, which was much to my chagrin. But then from there, after that one shot, they both got their own number one and ongoing series. Namor's then ran 72 issues. That started in 1968 and then ran through 1974. So between those two, Tales to Astonish run, and then his 72-issue solo series, most of the characters that we saw in this entry were introduced between those two runs. I guess other Atlantean stories, the ongoing Namor story that was going on as Tales to Astonish was finishing up, and he hopped over to the Iron Man Submariner one-shot and then started his own book. Some other stories, there's the Atlantis Attacks story that ran through the 1989 Marvel Summer Annuals. It's a fairly entertaining story there. Oh, I spoke earlier about how I love the Iron Man and Submariner crossover, all the great covers. There's a really great one there from Iron Man Annual number 10. It's a Bob Layton cover. Awesome Iron Man and Submariner cover there. That team up is definitely one of my favorites in the Marvel Universe. I think most people now, coming out of Civil War, they think of who they like Iron Man to go against or team up with. It's always going to be Captain America. I think Namor, most people associate him with Battle in the Fantastic Four, so they think Namor versus The Thing or Namor versus the Incredible Hulk, but I think really I love Namor versus Iron Man. So anytime I can see one of those covers, it's pretty awesome. So go check out that Atlantis Attacks Omnibus. There's probably like five of them sitting at your local comic store that they'd be happy to get rid of. So go do that. There's also the Atlantis Rising trade paperback. I believe that run was from the mid-90s, 94-ish. Maybe bled over into 1995, right before the Heroes Reborn initiative there. There was this Atlantis Rising crossover that ran through the ongoing Submariner series, Fantastic Four. I think those were bookended with initial issue and then kind of a closing issue, like an Alpha and Omega issue. Currently, there is actually an Atlantis Attacks ongoing series, or maybe it's a mini-series. Five issues of that will be collected in July in a trade paperback. There's some stories for you to go check if you want to learn more about the Atlanteans. For some reason, you want to subject yourself to more of my droning on and on voice, you can check out my podcast, KSCGSF, which is available at kingsizecomicsgiantsizefun.blogspot.com, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, just as KSCGSF. Thanks.
We came here to escape the chaos of Earth. Our people were trapped at the heart of far too many conflicts over the centuries. Assailed from all sides by those who wish to harm or exploit us. Only by removing ourselves from their world would we ever truly hope to find peace. So, tell us, my dear sister. Why have you opened our doors to the same chaos we fought so hard to leave behind? No matter how we may try to cut ourselves off from our home planet, my queen, we still have friends and allies who need our help. Who are we to ignore their plight? We are Inhumans. As both humans and mutants alike have repeatedly reminded us, we stand alone. And unless your friends can convince the king otherwise, so do they.
My name is Mark. I do a podcast on the Right On Network called Feathers and Foes. It is specifically and solely about the Birds of Prey. Movies, cartoons, comics. Right now we're in the middle of the 127 issue volume one run, so it's an index show. And then on top of that, I'm just a huge fan of popular culture. I host a show called Nerd News Now on woodlandsonline.com. You can find that directly on thekingdomofgeekdom.com. We are also on Spotify under Woodlands Online Nerd News Now.
I am very much an ignoramus when it comes to Inhumans. I know a lot of stuff actually from the multimedia, more than the comics, and a few individual select characters. What can you tell me about Adlon, Home of the Inhumans?
The first thing I can tell you, Frank, is that I've heard it pronounced a myriad of ways. I went through some cartoons yesterday and today, and some video games as well, and the show Inhumans on ABC, the ill-fated show that we'll get to in a second. But sometimes I hear it pronounced Adlon, and then sometimes I hear it pronounced Adlan, remembering the video games that I played, watching some cutscenes online, things like that. I watched recorded shows from the past, and they say it different ways.
Yeah.
To me, it's fine. Well, however anyone wants to say it, and I'm saying that mostly just to excuse myself if I slip here and there. It was created thousands of years ago, and this, of course, is based on the 1983 entry in the handbook. Founded by King Myron approximately 7,000 years ago, the city of Adlan was built on an island in the northern Atlantic, located about 200 miles southwest of Iceland. The Inhumans, as you may or may not know, are very advanced in technology. This city, wherever it may be, it's been in the mountains, it's been in the sky, it's been on the moon. Wherever it is usually shrouded. They have like a giant cloaking system. The Inhumans, if you don't know them from the comics, you might know them from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. went hard into Inhumans. The main character became Daisy and then was ultimately Quake. She, throughout the course of that show, finds out she's an Inhuman, so she has all that interaction with there, and they introduce the Terrigen Mist, and they clearly show you that is poisonous to humans, and basically if you're not an Inhuman and you get hit by a Terrigen Mist, you get killed. If you are an Inhuman, you get some power, but you don't know what power it is till you've gone through this process. Adlan is this royal city. For the most part, throughout the Marvel canon, Black Bolt is the ruler, Medusa is his queen, and then you have the other Inhumans, which I'm sure have their own individual entries within this thing. But as far as the city itself, it's just a prestigious looking city. It's almost like a PG version of King's Landing from Game of Thrones, or Game of Thrones Light. There's a person as crazy as Cersei and Joffrey that lived there, and his name is Maximus, often referred to as Maximus the Mad. And the reason I bring these characters up and not talk more about just the city is because these personalities keep Adlan on this high alert level, because Maximus, almost every storyline you see him in, whether it's TV show, whether it's video game, whether it's comic, he is trying to overthrow his brother. The story is old as time, right? Adlan was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and Jack Kirby has a history of these royal families that he creates, and at the time, Marvel really wasn't digging on it. After their appearance in Fantastic Four, it kind of got buried as a backup story in Thor, and that was issues 146 through 153 way back in 67 and 68. Those are the Thor backups. You can find them in collected trades now, but what I found fascinating is Adlan plays a huge role in those little backup stories, because there is even a story called Moving Day where Black Bolt has to enlist the help of another Kirby creation, the Eternals, and they move the city from where it was off the Atlantic coast somewhere in Fantastic Four during their first appearance in 45 through 48 way back in 65. They move the whole city with the help of the Eternals to the Himalayas. This city has kind of moved around. Like I said, the origins, according to Marvel lore, were like 7,500 years ago. King Myron took the Inhumans from the Kree. And just to hit on this point real quick, the Kree created the Inhumans through experiments. Got their freedom, took it under their own self to be really big into their genes and genetics. They take a lot of pride in that Terrigen Mist. And one of the things that happens in Adelan is the ceremony of the Terrigen Lab. Once you hit a certain age, you walk in there. You've seen it in the comics, but you've also seen it on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You see Clark Gregg's character, Agent Coulson. He goes in there. They release the mist on him. He's about a few seconds away from death as it creeps up his arm, turns it to stone, and one of the other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has to chop off his arm. And I'm giving spoilers, but this was on 4 years ago, so I think that's fine by now. Inhumans are basically, they're humans, but they were experimented on by Kree, so now they're Inhumans. The main reason they made Adelan, because they always had this idea of, well, we're not humans, we're Inhumans, we're high above them, they just look down on us like we're nothing and they're scared of us. So Adelan was really a reflection of how they felt humans had treated them. So by the time Fantastic Four rolls around with their first appearance, Medusa was part of the Frightful Four. She had kind of been brainwashed. The first family of Marvel was after her, but then when they realized that she was quote-unquote a good guy, Johnny Storm followed her around, made eyes at her sister Crystal, and then followed them into this grand refuge, as they call it, the Great Refuge, away from the humans, away from the strife. But what's ironic about that is, like, the more they stay in Adelan over the years, the more they fight. It's just a bunch of infighting, and it's always at the top with Maximus. Now, Frank, did you watch the Inhuman show on ABC?
I did. I was actually trying to get it straight in my head, because my recollection is that the actual city of Adelan was featured, I think, in the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And as you mentioned, that's when the agents went into this underground city, and that's where they first discovered Terrigen crystals. And as you said, that's when Phil Coulson was exposed. That's when Skye was exposed. My recollection is, in the media, that was the end of Adelan, because it was a totally different place from the refuge on the moon that was featured in the Inhumans TV show. Am I remembering that correctly?
Well, one thing is they dropped it, but also I did not realize how many times throughout history Adelan has moved. Off the Atlantic coast in 65, you know, they've been made by Reed Richards, who's this incessant mind, and he just wants to know everything about them. So they're like, we gotta get out of here. So the Eternals help Black Bolt move them to the Himalayas. They're then in the Himalayas for a while, and then in Fantastic Four number 240 in 1982 by John Byrne, they get sick. Quicksilver comes to the Fantastic Four, and he's like, hey, the whole city, we were being invaded, and then all of a sudden we have a plague, and it's infecting all the Inhumans there, and I'm fine right now, but also Johnny Storm, I'm with your ex, and by the way, she's pregnant. So that's kind of like a lot to handle. And you would think that a lot of people wouldn't help move their ex, but I guess since Johnny Storm was helping move his ex to the moon, maybe there's some people out there who would love to move their ex to the moon. I don't know.
I love that apparently an entire society was relocated in a coyote ugly situation with Reed Richards just being too intellectually curious.
That's not exactly how it came off. I inferred that through their four-issue first appearance. But in those Thor backups, they have Triton go out, swim around, go into the city, and he basically gets heckled by people. A couple of the other Inhumans find some awful people that don't like the way they look or whatever, and they're like, we gotta get out of here, because there's just really nothing for us here. Yeah, the Fantastic Four is cool, but we have a society to protect. Also, you don't want Reed Richards meddling around if you can help it. They go to the Himalayas, and then I did a lot of research on this, but I believe in Fantastic Four 105, Crystal had been living with the Fantastic Four, and she had to actually leave because she was starting to get sick. So that may be the first and only time politics has ever been in comics. So hopefully no one finds out. But that was basically a dig at the environment. Just kidding. It's in comics all the time. We know that. Then after that, way down in Fantastic Four 240 is when this kind of plague happens. Quicksilver comes down, his now pregnant wife Crystal, about to have their kid. Reed Richards meddles around and helps them move to the moon. Because, like, I guess that's just like, well, we'll just send you to the moon. I guess that was just like the next logical step, rather than move to a different set of mountains. I don't know. But they got them up to the moon, and they stayed there for a long time. And then I think way down the line in 2013 Infinity number 3, this guy you might have heard of, Thanos, he comes in, starts making a lot of trouble. Him and Black Bolt battle it out, and the city gets destroyed. They're able to rebuild it as the new Adelan, but I'm just covering this old Adelan, as you will. Yeah, that's a lot going on, but it's basically a royal City, kind of think King's Landing, with probably a more well-liked family than the Lannisters if you watched Game of Thrones. You have this nice layout map in the actual Marvel Handbook. Places like the statue to the founder, which is the monument to Myron, the Tower of Genesis, like I mentioned, you have the Terrigen Lab, you have the Arena of Judgment, which nowadays would just be called social media. Nice layout. I mean, it's a nice looking city. It's just, it moves around a lot.
Given the disparity in ratings between Game of Thrones and Inhumans, I actually think the Lannisters were much more popular than the Inhuman royal family.
Well, to the rest of the world, yeah, because you always want to, it's just the same thing with like Real Housewives of wherever. If they would have had Real Housewives of Adelan, it'd be like the number one show, right? But they didn't. They decided to make this version where everything was expedited. But as far as the city on the whole, you're right. Within this drawing, specifically Palace of the Royal Family, that's basically just the Red Keep. And then you have all these other aspects around, and it's usually where Maximus is sneaking around and plotting against his brother, the king.
A lot of stuff has come out recently about the friction between Kevin Feige and Ike Perlmutter, and one of the big sticking points was Perlmutter being a total cheapskate and doing things like not wanting to pay for Robert Downey Jr. to appear in Civil War, that sort of thing. I'm looking at the map as drawn by Eleanor Brown. Peter B. Gillis is given credit on this as well, but I'm not familiar with being an artist, so I'm assuming that there's just a fair amount of text and they gave him credit for writing the text on this particular entry. I'm looking at the image and this looks like a King's Landing scenario. A broad scape of all these different structures and all these different neighborhoods. Regardless of anything outside of Adelan, there seems like there'd be a lot going on within this city-state as well. And then I think back to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and this was represented by some caves and like one chamber, essentially. And then I think about the TV show, and there's basically a few rooms and a mining hole. You're going to have to spend some money to represent this. As much as they tried to make the Inhumans be the mutants, obviously with the royal family, with having a base on the blue side of the moon, and all these hidden locations and everything else, it's much more fantastic than just a bunch of people in leather jackets doing special effects powers. You sold the Inhumans short. It was obviously promoted passion to make Inhuman happen, but he also wouldn't put the money into it to do so, and the results was a show like Inhumans, which I watched all the way through while washing dishes. The show I would put on because I knew I would not have to pay attention to it, but it does make me ache a little bit to see what this could have been, and I'm wondering if maybe what Eternals is going to be for Marvel, this could have been a really great fantasy scape. We've seen Asgard, we've seen Wakanda, the planet from Ragnarok, and it would have been so neat to have seen Adelan portrayed in that manner and to get to see all these intrigues. With Disney Plus and everything else, I was really hoping I'd have the opportunity to watch the motion comic of the Paul Jenkins J. Lee series. I don't see myself going out and reading it, but I thought it'd been really cool to at least watch the show they made, that version of the show, and I couldn't find anywhere. So it's frustrating. As much as Marvel wanted to make Adelan happen, something as simple as giving me access to the motion comic without having to like go buy a physical copy, you know, it's 2020, we don't do that anymore. I think that as much desire as there was to put this over, I wish that a little bit more effort, a little bit more money had been put into that as well.
I was kind of amazed doing research for this, just how much Adelan has come up in other media. Disney Plus has the Fantastic Four cartoon from 1994, and there is a three-part series as episodes 15 through 17, and that's how it's listed on Disney Plus and may have aired differently according to IMDb or whatever, but it was just called The Inhuman Saga, parts 1 through 3. There's a lot of Atlean either references or Inhumans coming into play on a lot of these Disney XD shows, Avengers shows. These were big characters to Marvel, but for whatever reason, it just didn't resonate or translate. And I think a lot of that might have to do with, we know how bad the Fantastic Four movies were, or at least the last one. The first one was actually okay. It's The Rise of the Silver Surfer, where Galactus is just a freaking giant cloud. That's the one I have problems with. What I'm realizing is the Inhumans in the comics go as the Fantastic Four go, or at least throughout the 90s. They're very tied to each other, and it's just like a family to family, and they gain their trust. Say you can have Reed Richards like being super jealous of their technology all the time, things like that. And I just think that dynamic works. If we ever get to the point where Fantastic Four works, like we all hope and think that it should, I think that Inhumans could definitely make a comeback, and I think Adelan could be a really good jumping off point. Use this as a base point to just get into deep, deep space. But we've already having some characters do that, and I don't know how the Eternals are going to change that trajectory into the deepest of space that the MCU hasn't quite made it to yet, even though they've toyed around with it and teased about it. And the other thing that I didn't remember is I think Adelan's been a level going back all the way to Marvel Ultimate Alliance Part 1. I believe it was in 2 as well. Those games are very dated now. But the game last year that came out for Switch, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, has a lot of cool cutscenes. And guess what? Maximus is trying to overthrow Adelan. So it's just, they're almost like synonymous with one another.
Inseparable, seemingly, yeah.
They've always been in the comics. You just could dig for it. Like I said, Kirby, I think his idea was just not given the respect it deserved at the time. Obviously now we look back and go, wow, Kirby, awesome. But whatever was going on in Marvel in the early 70s, it's like he wanted to build up the Inhumans and they just made it a backup story in Thor. And then he finally got the actual Inhumans series, but I believe it only went 13 issues. And that was with like 4 or 5 other creators. So he probably never met his full vision of that. And I'm almost wondering how Adelan would have changed over time, because now it's just the hidden magic city in the sky and the mountains on the moon. And you know that when you go there, it's just going to be a struggle between Black Bolt and his brother. All it ever comes back to. Which is a good concept, but we have so much of that in the Marvel Universe, especially with Thor and Loki and Hercules and Ares. Sometimes the characters you think should be at the top kind of shelved, overlooked, or just weren't bestsellers, I guess.
Howdy! Are you tired of the overcrowded big cities, the hustle and bustle of everyday life, and only being able to pet regular-sized dogs? Well, partner, I got a place for you to visit, Adelan, home of the Inhumans. Whether Adelan is in the mountains, floating above the sky, or heck, even on the moon, you'll always find comfort within its walls. We're a very friendly bunch, too. You'll be able to walk around with the royal family and even shake King Black Bolt's hand. And if you're really lucky, he won't talk to you at all. So, partner, get on over to Adelan. We got the Tarragon Mist, we got the Royal Hall, and we got Lockjaw, our most trusted form of public transportation. Even though he's a giant bulldog, he's way less hairy than all your crowded train subway systems and Ubers and Lyfts. So get on to Adelan, and we'll treat you like royalty.
Warning, human exposure to the Tarragon Mist can result in the following side effects. Death.
Get out to Adelan for an inhuman vacation.
Super, that was fun.
Excellent, thanks. I enjoyed it.
The official listeners of the Marvel Handbook Podcast are 20th Century Geek Podcast, The 108th Sage, Andre 79 Oliveira, Antifa Del Norte, Between the Pages, Brother Knight, Bunny, Caroline Wells, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Chris Dunford, Christopher Bush, Debosh, Delvin, DJ the Baptist, Doc Strange, Dr. Ant, Dear Ashton, who added, Thanks RSB, Ed Moore, Eric Borden, Fiendish Fitz, FSD Records, Guido, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Illegal Machine, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jax Webb, Jeffrey Brown, Jennifer DeRoss, Carl Ottersberg, Keith G. Baker, Kenny Crowley Jr., Law Dog, RPG Historian, Leather Snipe Bob, Luke J. Canetti of Earth Destruction Directive, Mudda, Book Blogger Reviewer, Marvel Universe Online, Megasheen, Mike It Send Aliens to Me, who tweeted, Nice, gives me something great to listen to when working. The Asgardians really went all out on the headwear, and you have to respect that level of commitment. Negro Justice League, Odell Abner Dracula, who added, I can also endorse the Dimension Z arc in Remender's Cap, Onward to Rad Adventures, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlick and Thanos Podcast, Robot Kraken Podcast, Ryan Daly is Socially Distant, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Stockboard Super, Warlord Worlds, Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace Podcast, and ZP International.
All characters and concepts appearing in the official handbook of the Marvel Universe and the distinct likenesses thereof are the trademark and copyright of Marvel Entertainment, LLC, a subsidiary of the Walt Disney Company. This has been a not-for-profit fan production from Rolled Spine Podcasts, with any copyrighted materials presented herein presumed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended.